Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to Show Talk with Angela Button. Today the interview is with Dr. Hopper. I hope I have it right. I have a tendency to get the names wrong. She is a psychiatrist, a doctor, a pediatrician for young people, and she's going to talk about suicide. Hold on, doctor. I'm trying to get the mic open. Give me a second. Give me a second. I'm trying to open your mic. Okay. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Hi. Thank you for agreeing to come. You're more than welcome. Thank you for agreeing to come on Show Talk with Angela Butler. Did I pronounce your name?
Yes, my first name is pronounced Danielle.
Danielle?
Danielle.
And your last
G is Hopper.
G? Okay, Hopper. I was saying Hopper. I apologize for that. Sorry, everyone, about the introduction. The reason I invited you on Show Talk with Angela Butler is to hear about suicide among young people, because that's something you specialize in. Well, pediatric mental health. I would like for you to tell everyone that will listen to this show, because it's pre-recorded, something. Tell them about yourself, your educational background, and the business that you own.
Yes, absolutely. So my name is Dr. Danielle Hopper, and I created a clinic in Marietta, Georgia, in October 2017 to address the mental health needs of children and adolescents. And I see and deal with a lot of anxiety, a lot of depression, a lot of ADHD, and autism in the community. And I also work at a part-time mental health clinic, and over there I see a lot of conduct disorder and oppositional defiant disorder and a lot of just behavior concerns. But overall, dealing with very common teen issues, including suicide. And my background is I earned a bachelor's degree in nursing from Georgia State, and I went on to pursue my pediatric nurse practitioner degree, my master's degree from Johns Hopkins University in Maryland, and then I earned a doctorate degree out of Minnesota, and then specialized in pediatric mental health, earning the pediatric mental health certification certificate. So I've been in... I'm sorry?
I was just saying the name, you're the owner and operator of Access Hope Mental Health Care Clinic in Marietta, Georgia?
Correct. I'm the sole owner, and currently I'm there. It's just one employee, it's just me, and I'm looking to expand my practice to hire a second nurse practitioner and then would like to open a second practice in Southwest Atlanta by the end of this year.
Yes, ma'am. And you treat patients 21 years old, under 21 years old?
Correct.
All right. So one of the main reason I contacted you is because I saw what you were doing, and I've heard about what you were doing by some people. You kind of referred to me.
Okay.
They said you wrote an article. I have talked about suicide among young people and isolation and social media. I'd like to talk about that, please.
Yes.
The young black teenagers, the young black people. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So traditionally, white males are the largest percentage of population who have a completed suicide. But recently, the trends have changed, and specifically between the ages of 5 and 11 years old, the number of suicides among black males has actually doubled since the early 1990s, while the number and the rates for white children have actually lowered. Many years of research was conducted because they wanted to make sure these numbers were accurate because they could not believe it. And that is a conclusion after this research. And they have identified that the rates of black young males is increasing and the rates of the white children are actually decreasing. So that is the conclusion of that study that I read about, yes.
All right. So why do you believe that this is and that young black males are killing themselves, young black teenagers?
Yes. There's a lot of thoughts out there as to why the numbers have doubled, including some hypotheses as well. So one reason they suggest that the young black males are more exposed to violence and they are more exposed to traumatic events like sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse. That plays a big role in increasing of depression, anxiety, PTSD. Another possible cause that they're relating to the numbers is a lot of young black people in general are found to have early onset of puberty. And, you know, quite opposite of that of an adult, when young children hit puberty early, this increases their risk of depression and also impulsive aggression. Because, for example, a young female feels embarrassed and more insecure if she has developed earlier than her peers or is more developed, you know, even as early as elementary school. So that brings on, again, increased depression, which can contribute to the additional numbers and early numbers of suicide. Another hypothesis they've been kind of debating with is in the Black community, not only is there easier access to guns, they've identified, but also they've noticed the number of deaths with that involve a gun have lowered with the white community, but actually are the same with the Black community. So that tells them that the safety education and information on gun safety as a whole is not reaching down to the Black communities. And there's also a component of religion in this as well, because they've identified that the older Black culture, they have very heavy religious faith and beliefs, and this has not been translated down to the younger generation. And without having that foundation of religion, that is likely playing a role as well into the increased numbers of suicide.
Okay. So what you're talking about, overdeveloped females, I was one of them. I was like a size C in seventh grade, and I had that to deal with the younger, with the boys, the male students.
Yes, yes.
So I understand
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
But,
mm-hmm.
but I don't understand why that would cause, why would that cause them to kill themselves?
Because it starts
to there.
Yeah. So it's definitely can start there. That can bring on some embarrassment. It can bring on self-doubt. It can bring on shame even for a young female who is developed early. And that can lead in, or definitely increase the risk of depression. So then you start with a risk of depression, and if she is getting, let's say, teased or bullied in school, then that's going to increase or even start the depression. And if this depression worsens or goes untreated, that is what leads to, you know, suicidal thoughts. And once again, the step after suicidal thoughts, if that goes untreated, undiagnosed, and you don't even have a discussion about it, that can actually lead to not just thinking of suicide, but actually acting upon it. The other side of that, if you have an overdeveloped female, unfortunately, in this climate that we live in, that is very attractive to sexual predators. So at some degree, that's putting her at risk for other things to even happen, and grown men are now looking at her because she's developed. And so if this happens to, if she's put in a situation where she's already vulnerable because she's young, she's depressed because she's overdeveloped, this puts her at, you know, again, a greater risk of something happening to her. If she ends up sexually assaulted, that leads to PTSD, that leads to depression and sadness. If that's never treated or never addressed, then that can lead to suicidal thoughts. And if suicidal thoughts, again, are never addressed, never talked about, never treated, never dealt with, that can lead to someone actually following through. So it's like a pattern. You know, you can start with sadness that leads to depression. And if that's not treated, it leads to suicidal thoughts. If that's not treated, can actually lead to the act of attempting suicide. And that is the number one risk of suicide, is a past suicide attempt. Those people are at the greatest risk of suicide. So again, if you're following that pattern and it's never addressed and the patient is never treated, they're at greater risk for actually completing that.
Okay. I understand what you're saying. In your opinion, what can mothers and fathers do, single mothers, divorced mothers and fathers, single fathers, single mothers, what can they do to help them? And how do you help the Black community understand more about mental health? What do you have any answers?
Absolutely. So a couple of things they can do. As a Black community, we had a lot of leaders in the past. We had strong social networks. You had, you know, families that knew each other on a personal friendship level, and they were able to connect together, you know, and fellowship together in addition to their children. And you had neighborhoods coming together. You had communities coming together, and it was a strong social network in the past. Also, previously, there's been strong family support. You know, you had grandmothers and aunts and uncles helping to raise the children that all, you know, were able to contribute to raising a healthy, secure child. You had the religious component also in the past in the Black communities. You know, people grew up in churches years ago. You went to church every Sunday, and you went every Wednesday, and you went sometimes on Saturday. So a lot of that and those cultural factors are now missing. So I think if the Black community went back to the basics as far as having that strong social network, having a strong family support, getting back into the church, getting back into community efforts to, you know, raise a strong child, those will be very helpful for that child because a lot of times they feel like they have nowhere to go or no one to talk to. And what parents can do, particularly the number one thing, is to listen to your child. You have to talk to your child. You have to communicate with your child. You have to teach them right from wrong. You have to teach them boundaries, and you have to tell them, you know, talk about their private area and what's off limits to anyone outside the home. And you have to have that conversation with your children at an early age. So when they know, you know, mommy told me to come tell her if this happens, they will know the difference between right and wrong. A lot of times, children are taken advantage of because they don't know what's right or wrong because they never had that conversation with the parent. So parents, number one, talk to your child, have that open line of communication, and listen to your children. There's been plenty of times when children are trying to reach out to the parents to tell them something is going on, and parents either don't listen or ignore it, or, you know, they are not willing to listen. So listen to your children. Communicate with them, but also once you know your child, you should also be able to see when something is different, when something is out of the ordinary, when your child kind of deviates from their baseline personality. And this could be as simple as, you know, she's kind of sleeping more than normally, or she's not eating as much as she used to, or she doesn't want to go out anymore. Those are red flags, and that, again, initiates the conversation. Hey, what's going on? I've noticed this. I've noticed that. And you start that dialogue with your child, and you'd be surprised what children are willing to tell their parents if they just ask them what's going on. And I think it just starts from there. Parents, again, talk to the child, and then if they notice anything out of the ordinary or they're doing something more or less than they used to, have that conversation with your child.
All right. So, have the what about young African American males? What is causing? What is contributing? Is it in general with young Black people when it comes to suicide? Is staring at the computer too long or playing too many games and not having contact with people, is that somewhat, is that some of it, not having direct communication with people?
Oh, absolutely. That plays a huge role. That goes back to strong social networks, because technology has kind of taken over, and not only has it introduced cyberbullying, where you can be bullied over your phone, over the internet, over the computer now, but it also engages the teen or the young black male all into their phone or the computer or the Xbox, whatever. And so they lose that, number one, they're losing social skills. They don't know how to start a conversation. They don't know how to interact with people. And they're also missing out on how to resolve conflict, because they're just on the phone or on the computer. So when you're not engaged in people and you're not engaged in society, you're not engaged in the community, you lose how to interact with others. And so technology, unfortunately, has just taken over, and it's actually kind of crippling our children, because, again, you're losing out on so many skills. And, you know, some screen time is good, but anything, I still recommend the 2 hours. Anything over that, you're missing out on life. And so, again, with the phone and with the internet and with the computer, you have cyberbullying. And you also are losing valuable social skills. You know, I have patients who tell me they have friends, but they're all over the computer. You know, they've never met them in person, and they don't talk to anyone at school. And I'm trying to tell them that's not healthy. You know, they have to be out and engaging and socializing and interacting, because that's helping communication skills, that's helping social skills, that's teaching them conflict and resolution. And you lose that if you're tied to your phone. So absolutely, technology is playing a role in this.
Okay. Is the disparity in your field of work among psychiatrists and doctors in mental health, is there anything discrepancy in that? That's not discrepancy, but is there anything that they're not doing, putting the word out in the community? I mean, are they getting good, actually really good mental health counseling when they do get the counseling? I mean, is there a disparity?
I believe there's always going to be disparity in research and numbers, because, you know, you still have a huge mental health stigma attached to how someone is feeling, how someone will raise their hand and kind of report what's going on. So even the numbers of, you know, mental health cases out there, or children, teens struggling with depression, anxiety, I believe cannot be 100% accurate, because part of the black community still is like, don't tell anyone your business. Nothing is wrong with you. You just need some discipline. And so when you have stigma still in the black culture, you will not ever get accurate numbers. So, yes, there's definitely disparity. Also, access to health care is limited. And then even receiving health care, you know, is a challenge for the black community. So I'm going to definitely say that the numbers are not accurate and there is disparity. But what we can do is with the data that we have is based on who actually, you know, show up in our office. We can do data and samples from those numbers. And those numbers are where we're getting the information, specifically in regards to these suicides. You know, that's record checking of death certificates. So on that, those numbers are accurate, unless, you know, for example, if someone was driving a car and meant to kill themselves by running a red light, but on the death certificate it says motor vehicle accident. We don't know if that person was actually trying to get hit or if it was, you know, an actual car accident. So those numbers would be slightly skewed, but for the ones that have a confirmed suicide, those numbers are accurate.
All right. So you really don't know how many young black people are actually killing them, who actually succeed in suicide. Okay. That's my understanding of what you just said, Dr. Danielle Cooper.
So the research has been done, and they are counting all the death certificates that state suicide. So that's the numbers that are going on. I was just speaking of the ones who don't fall under the suicide category, but the ones that have been counted as suicide rates, yes, those numbers have doubled since the 1990s. And, they've even identified that kids are dying at more dramatic ways, you know, than 20 years ago. There's more hangings and more suffocations now than 20 years previously. So all those data points are accurate. I'm speaking of the actual cases of mental health in the black community, because people still don't speak up about mental health. And it's still something that's kind of swept under the rug in the black community. So those cases of who actually has depression right now, who actually is struggling with anxiety right now, those numbers are not accurate.
Mm-hmm. So what can cause anxiety in a young black male and depression? What is the main thing?
I think the main thing is their exposure to trauma. There's lots of violence and traumatic events that happen to young black males in certain communities. And, if a young black male is witnessing violence, or is a part of violence, or being physically abused, or sexually abused, or emotionally abused, those are the core things that will drive depression and anxiety in the black community.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that makes plenty of sense. Everything you just said
mm-hmm.
really makes a lot of sense. I'm so glad you came on Show Talk with Angela Butler. I'm not through, though. We got to continue for at least another 10 minutes. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's
so with the violence. Do you think television, the internet, plays any part in the portrayal of black men in that they're so violent? Black men are so violent. I mean, in the movies and films, is that any way, do you believe, contributing to that, seeing other black men and black women have
mm-hmm.
such violent roles?
I think it all
just watching it.
Yes. Definitely, because if children are exposed, and this is just an example, but if children are exposed to, let's say, a black male on TV or a black male in a video game, and his only role is to shoot or kill or to punch and to kick and to be aggressive and to be violent and angry and irritable, then that is what the child is going to relate a black male to, because that's all they know. So I think it does influence these young kids. They're looking at, regardless if it's a video game, if it's a movie, if it's a TV show. You know, children, they are what they see, and if you expose them to violence and, you know, fighting, then they're going to think that is the norm. So if there's a black male, black young male growing up in a home, and he is exposed to physical violence every day, and let's say, for example, he sees his mom getting hit every day, he's going to think, number one, that is the way to act. He's going to decide that is his way of communicating. And then he is going to take that learned behavior, and that's how he's going to respond to any type of conflict that he is exposed to in the future, because that's all he knows. So absolutely, you know, what kids are exposed to is going to influence their behavior. That's why it's very important to know what your children are watching, to sit down and have conversations about what they're watching, to limit any video games. and not to allow young children to be exposed to, you know, violent video games or, you know, aggressive video games. They don't need that exposure at that young age because their mind is underdeveloped and they don't know how to process what they're seeing. So, you know, for those reasons, they are influenced, and that's why, you know, there's parental guidance for TV shows, movies, video games, all of that. So absolutely it plays a role.
Okay, so Dr. Danielle Hooper, all this plays a role. So what do you feel about the killings that are on media, that's in the media on the internet, cyberspace, social media, cable television, regular television, all the killings of young black males and women like Ms. Sandra Bland and others that have been murdered mm-hmm. by police. Some of them are mentally mm-hmm. ill, some of them are not. If a child mm-hmm. is seeing this and they're mm-hmm. exposed to murder like that, what does it do to them when they're like 7, 8, 10, 11, 12, 13, even 14? What does this do mm-hmm. to them when they're shown this and they see the killing?
Yeah, so I think it's critical we have these conversations with our children. Now, every child will differ based on their developmental age and, you know, based on where they are mentally. But I think, you know, when these news reports come on the TV and they speak of, you know, people being murdered, teens being murdered, Trayvon Martin, it's critical that we have these conversations with our teens because they need to know this is our reality. You know, I have 4 black sons, and I have these conversations every day with them because they need to know the climate of society out there. It's imperative. So you cannot shelter them from what's going on out there or they will be ill prepared. Now, I'm not, you know, for them watching violence on TV, but I am all about informing them and educating them because they need to know what to do if they get pulled over by the police. They need to know certain ways of dressing. They need to know certain things to say, certain ways to act, because otherwise there could be a huge consequence as far as death, you know? So it's critical that these parents have these conversations with their children to let them know what is going on out there. Otherwise, you know, they're walking into a world, and if they're naive, they can get really hurt. So, you know, it's important to have these conversations.
Dr. Hooper, the way they dress,
yes.
Here in Florida, Trayvon, the young man, the 17-year-old, was murdered by George Zimmerman. He was found not guilty. And
yes.
Mr. Michael Brown Jr., who was 18.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are you saying, I thought, you know, so a hoodie. I mean, are you talking about hoodie? Please.
About everything.
No. Everything, the way they dress. When you said
everything. Yeah.
Because see, I don't understand that, the dress part. Mm-hmm. If you have on a hoodie and it's raining, a sprinkling, I mean.
No, I'm telling them he was killed because he had a hoodie on. You know, so they can be, you don't have to be threatening anyone or waving a gun around. You can get shot for just wearing a hoodie. That's what I'm explaining to them. I'm telling them you can get shot just for selling cigarettes outside a store. You can get shot just by sitting in the car with someone and the police walk up to you. You can get shot by reaching for your wallet. That's what I'm explaining to them. So it doesn't have to be a situation of, you know, well, he did this because I had a gun out or we were yelling at each other. It doesn't have to go that far. It can be as simple as you're walking down the street to the grocery store wearing a hoodie and you can get shot for this. So I'm educating my boys.
Wearing
on
a hoodie? Why? But the hoodie, what is it about wearing that? I don't understand. You can't see their face or the age or something?
Oh no, I'm speaking of Trayvon and what Greg Zimmerman said. He said he felt because it was late at night and Trayvon had on a hoodie, and so for that reason, he felt like you know, he was threatened, which I don't understand. But I'm telling them how people can perceive that if you're wearing a hoodie, then they can claim that they felt threatened by someone else.
I personally just feel that Mr. Zimmerman is a murderer.
Absolutely.
My personal feeling.
He is. Yeah.
I don't think it had anything to do with a hoodie.
He's
a murderer.
Yeah, that was his claim. I'm not saying what he said was accurate. I'm saying that was his claim. And the fact that he, you know, was found not guilty is just another something else that we have to deal with and have that conversation with our kids that, you know, people are out here killing young Black males and then being found not guilty and not being held accountable for their actions. So there's a twofold to that. And again, that is
yes,
unfortunately the society that we're living in.
Okay, so with the young female, the trauma, if they're raped, molested, of course that's going to cause trauma. If they see the mother beat, that's going to cause trauma with the young Black females also.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I understand that. So what age do you suggest talking to young females, young Black females?
Well, you know, I'm gonna say start those conversations early. You know, you can start as early as, you know, when they're right before they go into school, which is, you know, the pre-K age, 3 years old, 4 years old, because they need to understand even at that age their private areas and boundaries, period. And it doesn't have to be, you know, a very lengthy conversation. You can just explain to your daughter that, you know, this is your area, this is your private area. No one touches this, and explain to her, you know, appropriate names for her private area, and then to teach her what to do if something happens outside of those boundaries.
Yes,
you know, it's just very clear. This is yours. No one touches it, and you if anyone tries to touch it, you say no, you scream, and you come get mommy. It's as simple as that.
Yes,
and you can have those conversations. And then as they get older and they can understand more, you can expand on the conversation, but you can start off something as easy as that.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Danielle Hooper, for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler. And I wish you great success at Access Hope LLC, where you're a certified pediatric mental health specialist, certified medicine nurse practitioner. Also, you have a PhD. So you have a doctor. You're also Dr. Danielle Hooper. So I thank you for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler. I wish I had more time. I'd like to invite you back when you have
thank
time.
Thank you. I'd love to come back.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, everyone. Thank you. All right, everyone. You were listening to Dr. Danielle E. Hooper. She's from Marietta, Georgia. She has the Access Hope LLC. It's AXIX Hope LLC in Marietta, Georgia. If any of you need help, you know, with your kids, 20 under 21, she's the lady you might want to talk to and take your child to. All right, everyone. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you.